he was covering for Jack Grealish and Ross Barkley like you would not believe in the last 15 minutes of that.
He was left back a few times.
Unbelievable. That's our centre forward, and that's not an instruction. That's just him seeing that Jack Grealish is brain dead in defence and thinking, oh, I'm not losing this fucking game that I've tried so hard to win. I'll get back, you lazy little prick.
Hi guys, Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left while you were
sleeping. That's all it took. Picture it now, Liam. Pep Guardiola reunited with Lionel Messi. Man City moving on to another level. The most creative player to play the game. Wearing a baggy sky blue jersey around him. Prowling around the false nine position, terrorising English defences. But Rolf Hasenhuttl has a plan for him, and its name is James Ward-Prowse. Knowing Messi has a tendency to save his energy when his team aren't in possession, Hasenhuttl pulls a piece of genius from the hat by stationing James Ward-Prowse at centre-back to punish Man City when Lionel Messi doesn't track him back. Doesn't work. Of course it doesn't. James Ward-Prowse playing right back tonight on Jack Grealish is one of the most disgraceful things I have seen in football. What was the plan behind that? What was that about? You know, like, did he think that Jack Grealish was going to track him down the pitch? Like, did he think that was a way of pulling Grealish out of position? Or did he just think Grealish isn't going to track so we can make hay here? Not realizing that you're leaving Grealish to go toe-to-toe with a centre midfielder, a creative centre midfielder. It just insulted me seeing that decision.
It was absolutely bizarre, yeah. And I think it's not like Grealish massively exposed him during the game, but it was just one really simple double movement from Grealish that resulted in the goal, and it just makes the decision look absolutely blatantly stupid then after that. Like, Grealish just steps inside and goes, right, I'm off. And James Ward-Prowse is 10 yards behind him. Like, of course he is. It's James Ward-Prowse.
Could not have been happier to see Jack Grealish register a major of sorts, you know, just because, like, that needed punishing. Like, I can't for the life of me think of the idea. Some people might say, oh, does that show how attack-minded Rolf Hasenhuttl is? I just say that is silly. Like, you know, Bertrand Traore's on the other side. You might as well play James Ward-Prowse over there. He might get more joy. Like, just strange, strange carry on. You have the best English player playing on the left-hand side, and you think that you can get away with not having someone marking him. No, like, they did get away with it for most of the game because, well, Ward-Prowse moved off him after 55 minutes, but because Southampton were on top, but they didn't get away with it because Grealish got a chance, set up a goal, bang. Aston Villa won the match. How they won it, I do not know. Very, very lucky, I'd say. I'd say if some of these decisions went against Aston Villa, the tone of this podcast, we would be having our biggest ratings for a podcast yet, I'd say, because everyone would be tuning in to hear our meltdowns. I think that I'm going to reserve complaining about VAR now for another two decisions going against Aston Villa. I think we've been owed those decisions, to be honest, but I think that's definitely it even now. And I will maybe let the next one go because Villa got lucky tonight. Don't think they deserve the win, to be honest. It's an amazing win, but not a great performance. But let's talk about the handball incident first. I think we differ on this. Like, the only question I have is, do people want that to be a penalty? Like, we can't really complain about how ridiculously pedantic VAR is and how unnatural it is, and then start slowing things down to look at an inconsequential touch of a hand. Like, it didn't affect anything. And if people want that to be a penalty, I'm really disappointed.
Well, you're assuming it doesn't affect anything because it's a tame shot, but you don't know. Like, anything can happen if it goes past the defender. You're not guaranteed that Martinez is going to save it. It's still a shot on target. It's not going wide or anything. The shot is too tame and his hand is too far from his body. I know it strikes his leg, so in that case, he does get away with it. But it's such a fucking stupid decision from Cash to have his hand out there. And he moves his hand towards the ball like a brain-dead numpty. And let's not forget, This is the third time he's handled the ball absolutely stupidly. And the last time we played Southampton, he risked a red card because he was worried about Theo Walcott. Theo Walcott controlling a football. And do me a fucking favour, get your arm down. You have so much time to react to that. He was practicing the fucking front crawl against Man City in his own box. And now this. And why the fuck would you handle the ball from such a tame shot? In general, but especially when you have Emi Martinez behind you.
Like, you know, we can pretend like it didn't hit his thigh, because obviously that changes everything. So just for the sake of a good argument, we'll just pretend like it hit his hand. And like, I don't know. It's definitely not as obvious as the Theo Walcott one, you know, where he's deliberately handballing it. And I know he's moving, but he's moving his body towards it. And like, it's, again, it just comes back to the question, like, you know, is this what we want football to be? Is this what VAR is for? Like, a ball is slowly making its way towards the keeper. I know I'm assuming that the keeper will catch it, but I think we can safely assume that. Like, you know, we've all watched enough football to, like, get real about it. And, like, it hits someone's arm that doesn't affect things really in reality. And we're slowing it down and turning football into a big virtual game of gotcha. You know, and like, honestly, I'm a bit aghast at the amount of people who want it to be given. Never mind, you think it should be given or whatever. It's like, people don't want that to be given. Like, you know, that's the sort of thing that would start ruining VAR, I think, because it's making the game a game of randomness where teams just buy a lottery ticket and then you get lucky or not depending on how your ball bounces around the box.
Ah, you know? Now come on. He's on his own 6-yard box and his hand is a good bit away from his body. And you keep saying it's a tame shot. That's exactly why he shouldn't fucking handle it. He has loads of time to react to that, apart from the fact that it hit off his thigh. But you removed that from the argument, so I think I'm happy to say that.
I was doing that for you as well. But like, yeah, terrible performance, right? Like, we're not getting away from that. Thank Christ for Nathan Redmond, is all I can say. Mm. He was one of those boys I went in thinking, is he another fella we can add to the list who has more caps for England than Jack Grealish? He doesn't, but he's obviously been called up to more squads, which is still unbelievable. Missed a shitload. Southampton on top for most of it. Like, for 35 minutes, it was all Southampton. Villa were class. The last 10 minutes of the first half, maybe last 15 minutes, and then just hanging on, but still looking potent enough. Not really potent, but still tidy. Like, I think we can safely say we're not Burnley, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, like, we definitely got away with one tonight. I mean, other than the Leeds game and the City game, that was our toughest game of the season. It seems to be in everybody's collective conscience that Villa are having a good season. It's generally accepted narrative. And compared to last season, they are infinitely better. But that's hardly an achievement. And it's great, and I don't want to dismiss the idea of incremental improvement, and I know it takes time, but when you replace Nyland with Martinez, Samago with Watkins, House with Konsa at right back with Cash even, like, jeez, the incremental steps should be getting wider and your ambition should be getting higher. But the nature of the defeats is the real disappointment. That's what makes me always think, are we actually having a good season? Like, individual errors, VAR shitstorms, unbelievable tactical naivety against Leeds and the first game against Southampton. But the nature of that result tonight was so gratifying. That is the first time I can think of that Villa have gotten something from a game that they didn't deserve. So that's a great, like, since they came up, like, that's just a great thing to now add to the list of achievements that we've had since we got promoted. And like, not only what happened to Southampton tonight, it's happened to us so many times. It feels so good for the shoe to be on the other foot for once.
That's actually true. Like, such an ugly win, and we haven't had that yet. And you're right, because I had this thought today. Obviously, I was getting nervous. Southampton, good team, well organized, as much as I'm slagging Hasenhüttl, like, good manager. But I was in that sort of quandary, like, this is the halfway point of the game. By the way, Jack Grealish didn't get a yellow card, so those 4 yellows are wiped. Good news. Should have started with that. But yeah, I was in one of those dilemmas. It was like, they've lost 7. And, you know, when you go through, obviously United and Man City are two of them, and United won. They played well, but, like, yeah, you just go through the list, like you've already mentioned some of them, but Leeds, Southampton, West Ham, Brighton, Burnley. You know, it's like there's five L's, like very disappointing L's, and we're saying we've had a good season, and it's obviously we are because we're beating a lot of good teams when we're losing to those teams. But yeah, like that is hard to take. Then when you look at it, that's also part of the reason where you think you could be doing even better. Mm. But yeah, ground that out, got very lucky. Finally took 3 points from a game you didn't deserve 3 points. So like that really adds up, especially when you're not doing as well. And they got it through, I would say, a very underrated header. Like actually an underrated goal. Like I don't know if people appreciate it, how it just switched from McGinn to Louise to target. Nice ball over the top, punishing Ward-Prowse. Lovely left-footed ball in from Grealish. And a really underrated header from Barkley. Someone said I think the commentator said all he had to do is get his head to it. Like he got his neck around that and put the ball exactly in the opposite direction that he was running in. It was lovely finish, but that switch of play from McGinn to Louise to target and then just springing Grealish away, that is something that Villa haven't had in the last 10 years. Like I felt like that I had to stop watching the better teams play because it was spoiling Villa matches for me then, because you know when you can see somebody who's free at the other side, it's like just get in the ball. Like in a good team switches that play very quickly, and Villa were taking five passes to get it over. Meanwhile, the whole defense has shifted across, and we always talk about imbalances. Villa could never find it. And just that alertness and execution from all those players just to create that goal was really heartening.
Yeah, I mean, like Dougie definitely plays the right pass, and it's great that he sees it, but he executes it atrociously, I thought. It's left hanging in the air. Luckily, it's hanging in the air to the best left back in the league, and he makes it look easy. And it's a great ball over the top, and I mentioned James Ward-Prowse not being a right back against the best left-sided player in the country. The control on the cross then from Jack and the header, yeah, the header are both excellent from the two lads.
Both excellent. Do you know what's really grim? Is that Villa are 3 points behind West Ham with just one game in hand, and it's like, oh, how has that happened? Like, what? West Ham have a decent team, but David Moyes is managing them. Like, do you know, it feels like we're actually 1 point behind Everton as well, you know, having played the same amount of games. Like, this is a great season, but I just thought we'd be further up the table.
Yeah, it is. It is strange. That shows you how tight it is that, you know, one or two bad results can really fuck it up. I mean, Villa have only had one win in five before tonight. The West Ham thing is strange because Villa were far too good for West Ham the night we played them, and they just, West Ham did what Villa did tonight. They ground one out in a slightly different style, but, you know, they still did it. West Ham, I haven't seen a lot of them play other than against Villa, so I'm finding it very hard to believe that they're being so effective, because that's all they can be with the team that they've put together. But it must be working. Like it's upsetting, but it's working for them.
Well, we'll see what they're doing on Wednesday night. 8:15 PM, another late one. Another late one for the boys in the podcast as well. Thank God there's nothing else going on in the world that we can just sit here talking about Villa the whole time. West Ham Wednesday night, another podcast on Wednesday night. This isn't the end of the podcast, by the way. I don't know why I'm teeing it up to say bye. We're going to get into some WhatsApp whinges here.
We're going to start with the thoughts of the Villa podcast.
Maybe it was just because I really didn't want to fucking lose to Leeds United.
And the lifting up of Patrick Bamford with one hand, I did enjoy that, because Patrick Bamford is an unlikable character and he's probably being a bit of a twat to Tyrone Mings all game.
He's nothing like that either, is he? He's a real... He's like, if you...
He's an unlikable character.
Like, what if he's put on a foot? Patrick Bamford can't skin you. It's not... He's not that type of player. It's not any game. Somebody put on a foot there.
I felt all the pain. I imagine I probably sound as much of a biased, one-eyed idiot.
Block the fucking shot.
It was a fucking disaster.
I did quite enjoy the hopelessness of their grief with it, though, as well. Because they're like, not that it fucking mattered anyway. Sure, we were beaten anyway.
Not that it fucking mattered anyway. Villa was shite.
Like, there's nothing but space. Leeds are going to be spanked a few times this season. Make no mistake about that. I mean,
They're really well coached. They're really aggressive. They're really adventurous. But the players are shit.
The key line is that we're well coached and very aggressive, but our players are shit.
They're not either. They're not shit.
I mean, that was great. That did have everything. Only downside, those Brommy accents, though. Really go through you, don't they?
What's up, whingers? 6 minutes?
Oh, as soon as that flashed up, all I could think about was your whinge last week about time wasters always paying off. Fucking absolute reluctance of any Villa player to waste some fucking time. The ball seemed to be in play for the full 6 minutes.
That's a good question. Are Villa too pure? Like, even, like, you know, the last 10 minutes, or the last 15, it was so open. And I know, like, I'd be sitting here complaining if Villa were just defending deep and, you know, and eventually get punished. And I know, like, you know, you want the second goal, but it just seemed like there was a lot of space for Southampton to keep coming at them. And so much so that, yeah, it's like, in the other direction, it's like, yeah, of course they scored at the end, the goal that was disallowed. It was like, that was coming because of the way Villa were playing. They didn't tighten up. Are they too pure?
No, I just think Southampton were absolutely brilliant, and Villa weren't good. I mean, McGinn and Dougie were being split open constantly, and the decision to leave on Barkley and Drury under that pressure was bizarre, I thought. I mean, Villa were just being ran through for the first 45 minutes and the last 20 or 26, as it turned out to be. It was strange decision to leave them on, because Barkley was too high. Grealish was nowhere. Like, I don't know what he was doing for the last 26 minutes in defense. Like, yeah, it was, I don't think it was down to purity. I think it was down to a lack of nous and just reliance on the back five to put in last ditch tackles.
Well, hang on, don't step on the next WhatsApp whinge. Make a fucking sub.
This is something you keep coming back to, Conan, but we talked about this at the start of the season, and even after we made our signings. Villa don't have a squad. I don't know what you want. I don't know what you want Dean Smith to be doing. Who did you want to come on tonight? I thought they could have changed the shape a little bit, but who the fuck are you bringing on? Nakamba was the one that came on. Is that what you're calling for Nakamba to be made earlier, are you?
Yeah, that, like, you're now using the thigh argument, basically, by saying Nakamba came on. Like, that's that's not the road I want to go down. Like, it need to freshen up. It doesn't matter who's coming on. Like, even Nakamba, like, they were hanging on. Like, it was almost like Smith was just waiting for Southampton to score before he would do anything. Again, this is what happened against Burnley. He doesn't act. He reacts all the time.
Yeah, but what he had to do wasn't anything to do with making a sub. Like, do you think bringing on El Ghazi for Traore would have turned the tide? It would have been absolutely irrelevant.
I think it would have given him a bit more legs, just defensively at least. Like, Barkley again had disappeared. This time for the last 15 minutes, it was 30 minutes against Burnley, so maybe he's getting better. You know, like, if Barkley needed to come off, they just bought Sanson. Smith told me during the week that Sanson's ready to go. I saw a clip of him on Instagram, knock the ball around Fred Gilbert and score. But I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know. He definitely wasn't going to bring. Imagine that was your fucking debut in that crucible tonight. Jesus Christ, you could have ruined him.
He couldn't, yeah. I thought of Sanson, and I thought, nah, there's no way. Like, he doesn't know him yet. Like, he doesn't trust him enough yet to throw him into a game where one mistake will lose this, or, yeah, stop the win. But I'm surprised that El Ghazi didn't come on. Trezeguet put Grealish into the centre and play Grealish off Watkins, just for the same reason you're saying, where did Grealish go? Like, just have Trezeguet on the right, El Ghazi on the left, in that defensive shape. Because, again, like, Villa weren't, it wasn't like you were getting anything back in the other direction. And I'm actually not getting at Traore. We'll get to him later. I actually had a great game defensively. But it just needed a bit of freshness. Even McGinn and Louise not getting at them either. They just might have needed a bit of support the way Nakamba gave them in the last 3 minutes.
Look, I suspect we were really conscious of and really worried about the spanking they gave us in the first half at Villa Park. I mean, that was a spanking we were complicit in. We undid our own belts and willingly lay across their fucking lap with our collective arse in the air. And look, of course we were worried about it. We were 4-0 down after 58 minutes. And that must have been in everybody's mind. And the approach tonight, we got away with it a bit, but you know, it still worked a treat. So like, Southampton had a lot of the ball and had a few dangerous positions, but nothing too dramatic. They had no shots on target in the first half. I say nothing too dramatic until the last 15 minutes. But at that stage, I don't know what changes you're making other than telling Barkley to tuck back in and to fucking wake up. Telling Grealish to tuck back in. Like, just even take up space. Like, they weren't even taking up space. They were just letting guys drift past them. Yeah. I don't know if there's a personnel change you can make for that. Maybe Nakamba. Fuck off. I'm actually not going down that road. I'm not making the argument for Nakamba coming on. What's the next whinge?
No, but just finally, it is just it's the opposite of everything that's amazing about Dean Smith. Like, it's almost like, you know, for the last 15 minutes when Southampton are overrunning you, like, and Martinez is making those saves and it starts looking really dramatic then because he's batting the ball into the air and people are flying across and blocking. It's like Smith at that stage then falls into hoping that Villa can get through this, you know, hoping for a bit of luck. And that's what it came down to in the end, rather than it came down to a lot of luck in the end, rather than just acting and taking some sort of decision, changing the shape even, like, you're doing something.
Yeah, like, I agree. We were too passive in the first half. We were too sloppy on the ball, and we were surprisingly cagey in the second half. Like, a lot of things, you're right, that I don't associate with this team, and maybe it did need something from the sideline.
Well, the next wind isn't going to get us off this, unfortunately. This is the worst I have ever seen Villa play.
And I agree. I think it absolutely is. It's the worst I've seen from a Dean Smith team. Yeah. But maybe that's just because we've had such a decent start to this season that we're, like, the games we've lost, we haven't deserved to lose, really, except for the Man City game. Maybe you can make an argument for that. The Leeds game, definitely, and definitely the first Southampton game. So it's a real big shock to see us play so badly and so passively. A lot of it was down to the players in the first half. It's a really hard balance to find whenever you're being asked to play that disciplined and that tight in defence. Not having the ball knackers you.
Yeah.
Just doing shuttles across the pitch. It fucks with your legs, fucks with your head. You can't think, you can't see the pass. Southampton are absolutely rabid. Like, they're mental. They're a really hard team to play against. So if you concede the game initially to them, it's really hard to get it back.
Last one. Tyrone Mings, the guardian angel of playing everyone in the country onside.
Oh my fucking God. Like, it was a bad finish from Shea Adams and a decent save, I thought. But, like, he's played onside by Tyrone Mings, our leader, starting his own defensive line 5 yards behind the rest of his team. Christ almighty. I mean, he made up for it towards the end with a couple of really important blocks and interceptions. Yeah. But Jesus, look, what a cock-up that would have been. And it wasn't like the line all popped out really quickly or anything. That still wouldn't be excusable. He's supposed to be our best defender. The line kind of just drifted out, and he just, classic Tyrone Mings, just stayed there.
Yeah. It's such a weird trade. It's come up a lot. Like, he stands looking at everybody, then he knows that he's culpable, but what happens then is he doesn't even just stay there and own it and try to do something from there. This is why I think it's actually just him switching off rather than a tactic or John Terry telling him to do something. It's he actually steps up then, realizing that I'm playing everybody onside, and then that makes it harder for him to try and get across and block. Thankfully, Shea Adams tried to hit it with his right foot, the outside of his right foot.
Bizarre decision.
Emmy Martinez couldn't. And Martinez was, like, flying across the goal, like, anticipating a good shot. They ended up batting it down at his chest because it was such a bad shot. And Matt Cash came in with an amazing clearance.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's a strange thing, and I think he must be really badly scarred from the amount of goals that Villa conceded from November to March last year, the amount of stupid goals, and I think he is just got into a bad habit of thinking that he can handle this just by making sure he's between the ball and the goals. Of course, it just really doesn't work out.
Yeah. I actually couldn't believe when they were looking, they're drawing the lines on them. Was it Mac Cash? It was, well, he ended up playing Danny Ings offside, but it was Matt Cash's earth, and I was like, right, they're drawing the line there. I was like, oh, okay, where's the Tyrone Mings line now? You know, waiting for the camera to pan to the right to see where Mings was, and then oh, everyone's on side. Actually,
it's funny you say it was Matt Cash. I had absolutely no idea who that was, and I'm only realizing that now. I was just staring at whoever's arse that was for about 5 minutes. Never once looked beyond his arse.
Anyway, we get into the categories. The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award. I've got four.
Fucking hell.
It was one of those games. John McGinn giving the ball to Romeo and then getting absolutely rinsed by Romeo.
John McGinn got rinsed by Romeo, and it was absolutely the worst thing I have ever seen, except for the fact that the same thing happened to Dougie in the first half. The exact same thing, where both of them managed to make Oriol Romeo look like fucking Maradona.
This is it.
No, really cocked up. Like, both of them were just apologies for a tackle. Like, what the fuck was that about?
It would be bad, no matter who it is, considering these are your anchors in midfield. Like, McGinn especially just looked so flat-footed on his heels as Romeo shifted the ball from his right foot to his left foot and ran around him. And set up. Did he say up? Set up Shea Adams? Might have. But like Romeo, when Grealish turned around the corner and just glided past him along the byline, that's Romeo. Like Romeo, usually then like his artillery like allows for him to then just chop down Grealish. Like that's what he's good at. Not fucking taking the ball past two good holding midfielders the way he did so easily. And McGinn just gave it to him on a play to start. Like, one of those ones, the game where he's trying to drill it to you don't know who, and just kicks it straight at the player in front of him.
It was pathetic, and yeah, the fact that he did it to both. The fact that Southampton's holding midfielder did that to both of our holding midfielders really tells you everything you need to know about tonight's game.
Tyrone Mings, come on down. The pass back to Emi Martinez that almost let Danny Ings in.
Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. I don't know what was worse though, the back pass or Emi Martinez waiting for it. I mean, Jesus Christ. Like, that was getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And there is no way he could have been that confident that ball was coming through to him.
Did you see Konsa roaring at Martinez again? And I like this dynamic, but it was because Konsa blocked a cross out for a corner. And he seemed annoyed that Martinez didn't just say, leave it, I've got it. Because Martinez had anticipated, he sort of fell down on his 6 yard box trying to catch it. And Konsa, meanwhile, had slid and stuck it out for a corner, got up and said, well, give me a shout, man.
I thought Martinez complained to Konsa for clearing it, yeah. And
right.
Was saying, shut the fuck up. It was a ball across the 6 yard box.
That makes more sense. What do you think of the goal that wasn't because Martinez was fouled?
Martinez is definitely jumped into by Romeo there. It's similar to the last 2 weeks. It's getting a little bit worrying because he was so calm and collected under those situations at the start of the season, and he's dropped the ball 3 times in the last 3 games. Now, on every occasion, I stress that, he was definitely fouled. I don't think there was a lot in the Romeo one. It was almost like he was waiting for or looking for the foul. I would still want him just to catch that and push Romeo to the ground.
So this is it. It's obviously a very high bar that we have for him now, but I'm exactly the same as you. Just getting a little bit worried because it's like, he's just not infallible. He's not just cleaning everybody out. And I'm not sitting there laughing going, what do you think was going to happen there? It's Emi Martinez. You know, I just have to shut up and be like, oh, that was soft enough, but still a foul. But, you know, I just don't like that feeling of Martinez because I've never had it before.
Yeah, it is. It's worrying. We'll keep an eye on it, Con.
We'll keep an eye. Watkins, Minson, McGinn as Villa were in the attack.
Oh my god, that was desperate. Like, Watkins should have been sent off for that. What was that? How did that happen? How did Ollie Watkins end up doing a 2-footed lunge tackle on our center midfielder? Jesus Christ.
I don't know. It was like he was leaving it. They both deliberated, so Watkins thought, okay, I'll just get it, but he was stretching for it and ended up sliding through as McGinn decided, I'll take it. And Watkins ended up kicking it to a Southampton player and cleaning McGinn to the ground. And again, your holding midfielder is there on the ground watching Southampton strain down the pitch because his own player has destroyed him.
Yeah, here we fucking go again. Another attack that's going to lead in a shot wide from Nathan Redden.
Do you know the only thing, well, we're talking about Watkins, again, it is great that we have these players at such a high standard. So you're nitpicking, and like obviously, well, it's not a nitpick when we were saying on Wednesday that we want Watkins to score one-on-ones. That's fair enough. But he gets the ball caught under his feet sometimes, you know, in the box, and he looks a bit slow at shifting it, and he comes back out, and there's just that one where Grealish had given to him and gone off the shoulder, and Watkins is there then trying to get back out of the box, and it's like, oh, we just missed a chance again because you've got the ball trapped under your feet.
I don't know. Like, Watkins is running around like a maniac up there. He's constantly changing his run. He's constantly going for a second run when he doesn't get the first pass. The ball gets played under your feet a lot in those situations. If you're moving, trying to get free, I have absolutely no worries about Ollie Watkins.
Neither do I, in fairness. I've got the winner here anyway, so the others are just token nominees. Ross Barkley giving the ball away 20 metres out for no reason and then bundling someone over 20 metres out.
There's so many things that went wrong here. If you've spent too long on the ball, then the pass you thought was the right one is no longer the right pass. And all those other professional footballers on the pitch can tell what you're now planning to do. And then the other thing is, once again, it's Oriol Romeu on his left foot. You're close enough to him. He's under a bit of pressure. Let him shoot. That's a much less dangerous situation than a 20-yard James Ward-Prowse free kick. As we found out in fucking November, how short is your memory?
I genuinely thought the only two instructions coming into this match would have been do not give away a 20-meter free kick and don't give Danny Ings the run of the pitch like we did the last time. Like, just very clear. Very simple. If it's Romeo on his left foot, then let's take that rather than giving James Ward-Prowse a dead ball 20 metres out.
This is a stupid example, lads, but just say it's Romeo on his left foot 20 yards out. Let him have the shot.
Like, what was worse there, giving the ball away 20 metres out or bundling him over? Like, probably the bundling over, because as you say, it's Romeo on his left.
Because it's Ross Barkley, though, it's the pass. Like, the pass, yeah. he's an attacking midfield. Like, he expects someone like Ross Barkley to be a bit clumsy. And like, he's not assessing that situation. He's thinking, I fucked up. There's a guy at the edge of the box with a ball. I'm just going to try and put something on him here. Like, the pass was so bad, so telegraphed. It was absolutely terrible from our centre attacking midfielder.
And it was weird on two counts, because the pass was on when he wanted it to be on. All he had to do is play it. And then, you know, yeah, when it's gone or when he's deliberated, like, Barkley is, like, his best trait is not usually going and doing that thing then. He'll pull back out. Sometimes Barkley just turns around and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, and it's just like opened up a whole new area of the pitch for him. Like, you know, you don't see players doing that often, just turning around on the ball and going in the other direction and, you know, just freeing yourself up and giving yourself more opportunities. But this was everything that he's not usually.
But that, like, he was so slow on the ball that Romeo sold himself before he even played it. So all he had to do was not play the pass.
That's what I mean. That's why it was so strange. He could have just pulled back and done something else. Well, he wins that. The Paul Lambert, I'm delighted of our performance. I'm fed up with this shit award. Getting caught out with pullbacks. Like, every team does, in fairness. But like, how do you defend that? Like, it's so obvious. Like, a player comes in, they're closer to the byline, and they're going to pull the ball back. And there's always a space there. Hmm. Like, why is there always a space there? Like, I know you have to defend the striker who's level with the ball, but you don't need 5-6 players doing that. How is the pullback always on every single time? And yet again, thank God it was always Nathan Redmond that was there receiving it.
Yeah, there's a couple of more dangerous ones as well that the Southampton winger or fullback just didn't see. And you could just see it at the camera in the last 10 minutes. It was like, oh, have you pulled that back to the edge of the box? But yeah, it's because of the Tyrone Mings drift. he's bringing everybody back with him. Everyone is caught up in his current of uncertainty, and they're all getting dragged back into their own 6-yard box.
But why is Douglas Luiz and John McGinn doing that as well? Like, it is the most terrifying thing, I think, watching football now, is that slow motion when you see the ball rolling across the carpet, coming back out, and you don't see who's there because the camera's following everybody. They're following Tyrone Mings and his drift. And it just feels like forever when the ball is kicked, and it always looks like it's going in when it goes wide sometimes.
Mm.
I can't get over how many times you can be undone by it.
Yeah, it's insane. Remember Pep Guardiola, that glorious season Man City had where they got the 100 points, and just the amount of goals that both Sané and Sterling got from both just pulling the ball back to each other. It was insane that he was just able to convince the two of them, don't do anything else. You pull it back and the other guy will pull it back for you as well. You're both score 30 goals this season. It's going to be fucking great because nobody knows how to defend against it. And still, 3 years later, nobody knows how to defend against it.
It was interesting during the Villa Man City game. In a way, like, you know, Man City are class to watch, right? But I was thinking, I don't know how good it would be to be them unless you're De Bruyne. Like, they did that a few times, you know, when nobody was there. And it just showed me that, like, that's just all automatic. Like, they just go through the routine. When I'm here, I do this, like a basketball set play. And it's like, ugh, you know, I'd say that's mind-numbing. Like, and that's probably why everybody thought they would fade this season working under Guardiola. But, yeah, who am I to criticise it? The second one, I'm fed up with this shit. Traore clearing the ball back into his own box. How does this keep coming up? Like, how can this be mentioned on more than one occasion, never mind 5 occasions now?
Yeah, there's been a couple of occasions where you've mentioned it twice in the one podcast, which is all the more baffling. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know what else to say about it. It can't be explained.
Like, this one wasn't as bad, you know, but it was, like, it wasn't as bad considering where it landed in the box. Like, you know, it landed in a more favourable area of the box, but he's on the edge of the box this time, in the centre of the box, and it's bouncing to him, so he just tries to hook it clear, and he just hits it up into the air, and it bounces down the corner that he's facing. Southampton headed in, there's another chance, you know, because Traore, yet again, hasn't cleared it. Somebody who's so good with his first touch just can't connect with the ball seemingly when he has to. But
he just loves creating chances. Doesn't matter who it's for. If he's in the box, there's a goal chance coming.
It's in his blood. He wins this award. The Weimann meter going up. I've got Ezri Konsa just for blocking the Ings shot anyway when the offside flag was up and everybody else had stopped, and Mings was just going to put it away just in case. And Konsa came flying across past Tyrone Mings, slid down and just buried Ings, whose shot didn't go into the net. It just summed him up for me. He was like, he knew the offside flag was up and thought, fuck this, he's not getting a goal even if the game's not happening.
Well, like, he knew the offside flag was up, but he's the only player who seemed to remember what the new rules are.
Yeah,
keep fucking running. Matty Cash sees the flag and stops. He nearly starts jogging back into the right back position.
Yeah.
And Konsa has to be the one yet again to sort out a potential mess. Now, as it turns out, he was miles offside. You know, don't know what sort of an arse Matty Cash would have to play him onside in that situation. But, like, Jesus Christ, deal with that. And Konsa, sure enough, does. And it was great as well because it was such a strong tackle that actually went through Rings as well.
It was equivalent to the Dyer one on Sergio Ramos. It wasn't as unnecessary. Remember that England-Spain match where, like, Dyer just comes flying up from centre-back to close down Ramos, who's just trying to clear the ball. Mm. He gives away a goal kick and gets up and sprints back thinking he's brilliant. It was sort of that energy, but as you say, it was a bit necessary. I'll give Mings a pass on this one because he was so far offside. He knew that as well. He turned around and saw the player behind him. Traore is going up because of his discipline. Just, he's been getting a lot of pelters, a bit of criticism, because his tendency to switch off, maybe not. I've seen a lot of people, an awful lot of people, talking about bringing Elmo on. I think that's depressing. Like, you know, I'm Elmo's biggest fan, but the amount of suggestions, even against Burnley, it was like, get Elmo on for Traore because we need help for Matt Cash. Like, that is just depressing if we're going down that route. And Traore was just honest. Like, he knew where to be. He's getting better and better shape-wise, and his energy pushing out when the other team have the ball at defence or they're trying to go back to the keeper, he is flying forward, and he's making it difficult for them. Like, just by him not making it easy for defenders is ultimately contributing to Southampton not having as much control. And yeah, I think he's well switched on, and a lot of people haven't given him the credit for that.
I think a lot of people are scarred by the Chelsea game when he was a genuine worry during that game, and he actually caused one of the goals. And people just, that first impressions are hard to shake off, Conor. And people just remember that so vividly because it was absolutely hilarious how bad it was. I mean, it became a joke while you were watching the game. And like, people are way over dramatic. You're playing Burnley. Like, you're not going to bring on a right back who has played in a more advanced position before for your fucking one of your free forwards. Like, do me a favor, Raps. Under no circumstances are you going to do that against the Sean Dyche side. It'll be all right.
I've got two more going up just for two reasons. John McGinn for his block in the 85th minute. Tidying up after Mings, was he? But just flying across, I think it was a corner. No, he wasn't tidying up after Mings. I think I just assumed that. It was a corner that broke down. And it looked like it was going in. That was the one that Hasenhüttl was celebrating. 85th minute, McGinn came flying across, slide tackle, great block. Cash block to follow up. But it was, there was a couple of bodies in the way. Just that was crucial. Like, we needed that. And that's, again, like, that's where John McGinn's at his best. Like, you just need him with that bit of bite and anticipation.
Yeah, it's a triple save, and it's once again exemplary last ditch defending from Villa. The save's extraordinary. McGinn's block is ludicrously good, and Cash is in the right place. But even Tyrone Mings is desperately closing down the shot as well, and it goes through Tyrone Mings' legs, no fault of his own. It was a great attempt to block it, and Cash is there behind him to clear it off the line. It just really, that summed up tonight's game really, really well.
Maybe that's why I just decided to blame Mings, because he didn't get the block. That was very harsh, in fairness. And I've got Cash for his clearance after the Shea Adams chance as well. Like, you've got a good save from Martinez, and then they could just bundle it in anyway, and Cash comes flying and puts his body on the line and gets the ball over. He's just a tough, tough character.
He is a tough character, and had a really, really bad start to the game as well. But this has happened to him before as well, and it hasn't affected him, where he's come back strong and he just keeps doing what he knows he can do, and he doesn't seem to let bad performances or absolutely brain dead decisions like handling the ball in your own 6-yard box get to him.
I've got two more suggestions to go up. This seems strange because because it wasn't a great performance. But then I suppose that's the beauty of the Weimann meter for anybody new listening. Andreas Weimann, I think you put it well, Liam. Like, gave his all. You could never hate him for all the work rate he went through, but ultimately he wasn't that good. So it's just a fondness for someone who's doing the right things and doing what you want them to do at the base level of things. That's why Grealish is never on this meter, if anybody's wondering where the fuck is Jack Grealish. The two suggestions I have going up are Matt Target, because like, he had gone down to basement level, like, and beyond, and he has gone up like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks in a row now. We still got a long way to go up considering how far we were putting him down. And yet again, like, this is my left back. This is a left back that I'm on board with, and nice ball for the Grealish setup. And tough tackling, not getting caught out again. Looks fit. And another game where I'm like, good man, Matt.
Yeah, he was really good up until the offside goal at the end. I mean, that all starts from Target being weak as fuck in the tackle. And John McGinn, once again, needlessly trying to use his fucking arse. And once again, losing the ball. Like, the two things that have frustrated me most this season nearly resulted in us drawing that game.
And that's why I had a question mark beside him.
Yeah, but that was so bad and just so reminiscent of everything I hate about Matt Target that I'm going to have to keep him steady.
Your veto has been used. What about Ollie Watkins? Does he go up, or is it just another steady performance? You mentioned the runs. Like, that's why I put him in. I was like, oh, do you know what? He just goes through too much work to not go up all the time. Like, the energy he brings, the amount of balls he controlled with his thigh, amount of fouls he won. The referees seem to love him, which is great. He just does the right thing so often. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he does the right thing in attack continuously. He's an incredibly clever centre forward. But then for the Vineman meter, you know, the effort that he puts in, like he was covering for Jack Grealish and Ross Barkley, like you would not believe in the last 15 minutes of that.
He was left back a few times.
Unbelievable. That's our centre forward, and that's not an instruction. That's just him seeing that Jack Grealish is brain dead in defence and thinking, oh, I'm not losing this fucking game that I've tried so hard to win. I'll get back, you lazy little prick.
Anybody going down? I don't have anybody going down. Like, I know it was a bad performance, but heart-filled, and as you say, it's great that we won one of those games for once.
No, I don't think so. I think everybody put in a real shift, and it's just I'm in too good a mood to bother putting anybody down, because it is just a game that I wanted to see Villa win.
Well, questions we can't answer, but probably will. How on earth did Villa win that match?
Like, I think it's pretty simple. I've always said if you don't give James Ward-Prowse 2 20-yard free kicks, if you don't let Danny Ings have a free shot at goal, if you don't let 5'7" John McGinn mark 6'7" Yannick Vestergaard from a set piece, essentially if you don't go 4-0 down against Southampton, you really give yourself a chance at winning the game.
that's a very, very fair point. Southampton were the better team. They're a good team. They're fast. They're not as good as Villa. And yeah, like I did, someone was tweeting me, I think it was our friend Paul from Norway, who I've noticed from his tweets is becoming very similar to you, by the way, just the way, before we had recorded the podcast, or maybe after we recorded it and it had gone out, he was complaining about Burnley players celebrating as if they've achieved something. And I was like, hang on a second, is this Liam on Twitter?
You'd want to keep an eye on that.
But yeah, like, and I was sort of saying, you know, relax, as long as we don't give Ward-Prowse a free kick and don't give Danny Ings a free shot, then that will be a good starting point. And that's exactly where we did start from, except we give Ward-Prowse one free kick that we got away with. And that's the luck you need as well, I suppose, to win these matches.
Yeah, like, Southampton were surprisingly bad between the 35th and the 70th minute, and then they exploded into life, and we didn't really deal with it, but got away with it. And between those minutes, we took advantage of it by getting the goal. So, yeah, tough shit, Southampton.
Do you know what the expected goal was?
Oh, fuck, I wouldn't want to think about it. What,
3-1? 1.9 to not 0.6.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not Burnley levels, but it's not great for Villa. Who'd be better at holding the ball in the corner? John McGinn or John Walters?
They've both got incredible arses. John Walters' arse has never let me down, though. John McGinn's has let me down several occasions this season.
Yeah, but he hasn't had a corner. Like, see, no, I think you put it perfectly on Wednesday where you said he tried to throw a blind arse. See, he tries to use his arse for tricks, but when he's in the corner, he's got one prerogative. The ball is there, and my arse is between the ball and the man, and this boy is not getting past. And like, he only had 30 seconds to do it today, and he held up well. John Walters, in fairness, had 20 minutes to do it against Germany at the Viva, and he did it with four men hanging off him.
Yeah, that's still one of the greatest sports photos of all time, is John Walters' arse holding off four rabid Germans. There was Jack Grealish and John McGinn is such an incredible pair of people to have in the corner flag whenever you're trying to waste time. There was one where Jack Grealish had the ball and there's two Southampton lads looking at him and they're afraid to tackle because they know they're going to get skinned. But then Jack Grealish played the pass inside. I was like, who the fuck are you passing it to? Oh, right. It's John McGinn's arse. We'll be all right for another couple of seconds.
Last one. Why don't players all roll their sleeves up to their shoulders?
Yeah. You could also say, why doesn't Matty Cash just stand up straight whenever the ball's at the other side of the box?
But like, I couldn't believe it when, no, maybe the commentators have got this wrong, but they were like, you know, look at the sleeve though. And I was like, what? Are we actually looking at the sleeve? Like, regardless if that's his arm or not? Like, what if you had a Cameroon 2002 jersey, which is basically a vest?
That is the future. That is the future of sports kits, I'd say. But yeah, when they changed the handball rule, they had to bring in the sleeve, and that was it. I mean, it tidies it up a little bit, but it's such a shit rule.
Like, honestly, if I was a player now, I'm going out pulling my sleeve up. I'm sure they're maybe... I'm just surprised at how much this language is used, the sleeve. Like, yeah, they've brought in the sleeve as well. Like, what happens if Ings just wants to show off the rest of his tattoos, pulls it up? Is that offside then? Liam? Is that offside or not?
Look, if he can score, he can score with the upper part of his arm, so it's offside. Like, it's pretty clear. Next week, now, whenever Sofel scores with his arm, I'm going to be giving out absolute stink about it. But, you know, tonight it has worked out perfectly well for us. You can score with your arm. Ollie Watkins' arm has been offside 3 times this season.
Yeah.
So, you know, tough shit. Like I said 20 seconds ago, tough shit, Southampton.
Yeah, you know what? 3 times. I said I'm not going to complain about VAR. Fuck that. If that happens on Wednesday night, I'm going to go nuts. But it's West Ham on Wednesday night. It's at home on Wednesday night. We hammered them the last time into the ground. They got 2 chances and scored. Let's just sit back and enjoy what's going to be another dominant performance, right? Like, we're going to be on top the whole game.
I don't want to drift into making predictions, but yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's the beauty of this podcast. We never make predictions. We just come along in hindsight and tell everybody what they did wrong. And we'll do that again on Wednesday night, and hope to see you there. Come join us. Send us an email if you want at thevillapodcast@gmail.com. Be good to hear from you. And until Wednesday, have a good one. Enjoy it. Like, we actually really deserve that. We got lucky. About bloody time. See you on Wednesday.